Hey guys, welcome back. Very popular guest that we've had on before. Similar of mindsets in many aspects to what I am in terms of opinion. Always great to get an update from Bill Holter. Bill, welcome and thank you for coming back on.
Thanks for having me back, Francis.
So there's been some interesting news from the Federal Reserve. It's been a bit of a twitchy period and quite active. I'm going to point to two recent articles, Bill. One inside which, and maybe even I'll bring in the share screen so that the readers can follow this with us. There is apparently an undershoot on the original expectations of borrowing, where previously they set a pretty high watermark in terms of what they expected for quarter one. And it's gone on to be slightly under that at a very, somewhat very large nonetheless. 760 billion required for quarter one. So what's your take to this lower than forecast that caused the bonds to rally and the rates to fall on 760 billion borrowing in quarter one?
Well, I would say it's like many of the other things they do. Many of the other announcements that they make, they walk back. So they're able to walk this back and say, look, we're only borrowing $760 billion. Well, if you do the math, that's $3 trillion annualized. I mean, so how wonderful is
Insane.
that? The US debt went up 2.5 or $2.6 trillion last year, and they say that the deficit was only a trillion and a half. Well, then if it was only a trillion and a half, why did they have to borrow 2.6 trillion? It's
Yeah.
basically it's I guess you could call it managing expectations.
Indeed, indeed. I think they're artists of great deception in terms of expectation management, throwing out that shock number and then hopeless, then overperforming by coming in under on it. The other Reuters article, who we know well, Reuters and its following, Fed to allow the emergency bank lending program to expire on March the 11th. How do you think that pans out for them, Bill?
Well, like my response was prior to the call, good luck with that. I mean, they had to put it in place last year. If you remember, last March, you had the three or four banks in the US blow up, and it was no small thing. If you added their assets together, the assets of those four banks were bigger than all the banks that went down back in 2008, 2009. So it was a really big deal. Now they're saying that they're just going to stop the lending facility. I would just say, can they really do that cold turkey? I mean, let's look at it from a broader standpoint. The Western financial system as a whole has been on life support since 2008, 2009. There's not been any point in time where the central banks did not support the financial system, and they supported it to the point where back, what, I guess 5, 6, 7 years ago, there was the argument about negative interest rates, which is ridiculous because if you have negative interest rates, it means basically, and I'm not going to go into it, but it basically means that everything paper is worth nothing. So they lowered interest rates to 0%. All of these sovereign treasuries all over the world borrowed like crazy because basically it was free to borrow. And I mean, looking at the US, the amount of debt outstanding more than doubled, yet the amount of interest paid out, the debt service, never really rose. It traded between 350 to, I guess the high level was about 500 billion in a year. And that was a function of the amount of debt was going up, but interest rates were continually going down. That didn't have the curtain pulled back on it until about a year, call it a year and a half ago, when the Fed was raising rates, the bond markets all over the Western world were crashing. And what happened, when interest rates go up, bond prices go down. Bond prices are inverse to interest rates. So as these rates were going up, the bond prices were going down. And just to look at, let's look at two things here. First, what that did was this past year, the U.S. has paid over $1 trillion in interest. That's now bigger than the military expenditure. And the U.S. spends more on the military than the rest of the world combined. So now you've got two items that represent well over 40% of incoming tax revenues. That's the first thing. The second thing is all of these Western central banks have literally blown themselves up. Looking at the Fed, they lost $113 billion last year on the value of their bond portfolios. Now, what is $113 billion? The last number I saw, and this was a couple years ago, the last number I saw was the Fed was operating with only $65 billion of equity. So in a year's time, they wiped out nearly double what their equity was. So you have the central bank that issues or backs the world's reserve currency is technically insolvent. Now, is there a problem? Will the Fed default and not make any payments on anything? That can't happen because they can create dollars. Does that cause a problem where the treasury bonds don't get paid? No, because the treasury will just borrow more to make the interest payment and the Fed will facilitate that. So you've got literally in the Western world, you have two drunks walking down the street trying to hold each other up. You've got the central bank and the sovereign treasury of all of these Western nations. They're all insolvent.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're tinkering at the edges. You know, it's only 760 billion, like you said, 3 trillion annualized. If they carry on at that rate, and it's more likely to have an uptick to the tail than a downward one. And we're talking about raising massive interest rate payments, as you've highlighted now, have transcending even the military expenditure. And the other thing that I always talk about, and that came up when we participated together, and I try to highlight it, but I'd like other people to hear this from a different person who's trusted and is of sound money principles. But I keep warning the following, and let me know you concur and put it in your own words for everyone to hear. Everybody thinks that the Fed is the ultimate go-to for interest rates. And initially they are in the short term, but when they abuse this continually, and then we end up in a cascading, ever greater fattening pipe of new issuance, in an environment where there's nobody in the room, everyone else is constipated and bloated. They've stuffed so many pizzas in their mouths, and here the guy comes with the next 100 pizzas for everybody to eat. And everyone's going, oh, no thanks, please. And they say, no, there's more coming, and there's another bus behind me. That eventually the market just says, look, we're not going to pay for that. In fact, we'll pay you to take it away. Almost, it almost has an inverse value. It's junk, and we'll do anything but that. That eventually the market will reprice the debt, and it doesn't matter if the Fed, due to recession, depression, loss of jobs, etc., bad news in the economy, wants to cut rates. They won't be allowed to issue debt anymore. And that's dollars, new dollars, right, through debt. And that's when they lose control. And that's when you get an interest rate spike, not because anyone wants the rates to go up, but because nobody wants the debt. They only talk about the rates and inflation as if it's an entirely contained and controlled situation. The other side of the seesaw is who's buying all the debt and who's going to chase it up and want more that the rates go down. What's your take on the fact that nobody talks about the other side of the seesaw? You eloquently stated, you know, for the one to go up, the other must go down, the inverse relationship. And it's almost like everybody microscopes on the one end.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let me try to break this down. First, let's go back 70 years, 60 years after World War II. The dollar was brand new at the being the world's reserve currency. There was no debt problem. Yes, we had a lot of debt, the US did, but after the war, the manufacturing ability allowed us to pay the debt down and it became normalized. What I want to get at here is even back then, the Federal Reserve only controlled short-term rates. Out, probably the furthest out they could control rates would be 2 years. They couldn't control five, they couldn't control 10, and they surely could not control mortgage rates. So the point I'm trying to make is when we were a fiscally sound entity, both the Treasury and the Federal Reserve, they still could not control long-term rates. Those are market, those are market priced. Now, here we are in a period of time where it's clear that both the Federal Reserve and the Treasury are upside down. The Treasury is without a doubt, I mean, mathematically, they're going to have to borrow more and more and more and more. So let's look at from a supply and demand standpoint, and that's what you're talking about, I believe, is when there's more and more supply, then the brokers, the banks, the insurance companies, they get filled up to the gills and they can't take any more. This is happening at a time when Saudi Arabia has said that they will accept other currencies for oil. And I'm bringing this in because back in 1973, the only thing that saved the US becoming a purely fiat currency was the 1973 oil deal, oil for dollars only, and those dollars were going to be put back into the treasury market. That created guaranteed, yet if you want to call it artificial demand for the treasuries, it funded the deficits is what it did. So here we are. And let me also mention that just before Christmas time, the United Arab Emirates had a statement of their own that said, we're going to accept all kinds of foreign currencies, but we will not accept dollars. So what I'm getting at is the demand for dollars is definitely waning. Now let's look at the supply and demand. We know that there's going to be more supply because the US cannot self-fund. We have not self-funded since call it 1960. So, the last 60 plus years. The other, and there is a point in time, and I think we're already there. There is a point in time where institutions don't have the appetite, they can't stomach the volume that the Treasury is issuing. You have foreign entities that over time have bought trillions of dollars. When I say foreign entities, not just, I'm not talking about just institutions, I'm also talking about central banks, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of China, the ECB, et cetera. The two that stand out obviously are China and Japan. They bought, between the two of them, they bought well over 2 trillion worth of treasuries. Actually, I'm sorry, the number is much higher than that.
Yeah,
The point
that's just
being,
1 year
those
of debt.
balances. Yeah,
That's just a single
the
year
point I'm
of
trying to
debt.
make, those balances have been shrinking now. They began probably around 2015, 16. They stopped buying, and then you started to see a little bit of shrinkage, and now you're seeing a big shrinkage. Who's buying that? The Federal Reserve has been known as the lender of last resort. And it's my opinion that before this is over, and when this panic and spike in interest rates that you're talking about happens, once we the Federal Reserve will be the buyer of only resort. They'll be the only buyer on the planet. And as interest rates rise, then you're going to have a panic move out of bonds because people, it's amazing that even today, many, many people don't understand that when interest rates go up, bond prices go down. It's the inverse of when rates come down, bond prices go up. Now, understand, Francis, that credit, debt, U.S. treasuries being the global reserve currency, those are the foundation to the entire financial system. And as interest rates go up, that foundation gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So you're hollowing out the foundation with higher interest rates, and you're creating the scenario where there's going to be a panic out of bonds, because people are going to figure out that bonds are, what's the saying, certificates of guaranteed confiscation, as far as purchasing power is concerned.
Yeah, head for zero. I mean, I'm amazed still by the number of people I come in, and many of them have their portfolios managed that are stuffed with bonds. They still have bonds and equities. And can I also say, you're going to have to watch those money market accounts, because that is based also. They've been a great thing. Go ahead. Yeah, give us your take on that.
We saw that in late 2008, 2009. We saw a money market fund break the buck, and then of course the feds came in and tried to calm that down. People generally don't understand money itself. I mean, I've seen all kinds of, recently in the last month or so, I've seen all kinds of commercials on TV for NerdWallet, I mean, you name it, and I'm thinking, you know what, These younger people have not even a clue as to what money is. The purpose people put into a money market, not it used to be, but not, and maybe a little bit now again since interest rates have risen, is not to make money. It's a place to park your money where you think it's safe. And people need to understand that the assets that are underlying these money market funds are basically corporate paper. So if you have corporations that are going out of business, that the paper that they issue becomes worth zero, and it dents the $1 dollar per dollar on the money market funds. So it's, yeah, that's a real danger. And one thing you mentioned, heading towards zero, when currencies go down, everything goes up. I mean, you could look at housing, you could look at stocks, you could look at anything. I just posted a chart yesterday on my website that showed the stock market, the S&P 500, versus an ounce of gold. It's priced in gold. And literally where we stand right now, and it's come down since the year 2000, the dot-com bubble, but we're still back at 1929 levels. So, and I mean, if you look at the Dow in terms of gold this century, it's actually down versus gold. So you've actually lost money. And people don't understand that. They look at their statements and they're like, wow, I made X amount of percent or X amount of dollars or whatever. But understand, your assets really aren't even going up as fast as the currencies. They're going up as fast as the currency's going down. But the currency is going down versus gold faster than the assets are going up.
And one other thing,
you mentioned the word infinity. It's important for people to understand that when currencies go bust, everything, including a cup of coffee or a stick of chewing gum, becomes infinity when the currency goes to zero. Because it means the currency will not work for any type of transaction.
Yeah. We've actually found our way to your site, and I encourage everyone to spot billhalter.com. I'm not sure if you can see it, Bill. Do you want to actually show me where that chart was, and I can pull it up?
It's on your first page. I sent it for post last night. Yeah, I sent it for post last night. I don't think it's up yet, but it should be up.
Oh, okay.
You know, later today or early tomorrow.
No problem. But the point is made. In short, you're not preserving buying power against the rate at which they are expanding fiat. So I'm going to summarize, and you tell me what you'd addend, Bill, in terms of a contagion, because people want to know, what do we do and what are the stages of this event unfolding? Because it's not a single straw breaking a camel's back. It's actually a process that's been going for a long, long time. The camel is already straining immensely and pretty sick. But something along the lines of the recession gets worse. People are complaining, job losses are going down, tax receipts drop even further, or the projection therefore drop even further. This implies greater borrowing being needed actually by the government, because income goes down, yet the liabilities remain as ever. We actually have these two dichotomy. I'm gonna sidebar here, I'll come back to this whole scenario, but I just wanna sidebar. We were discussing before we started, all this plethora of mainstream media is all talking the war game that has to happen. You've got Australia, Sweden, the UK. We don't have enough soldiers. A war is imminent with Russia. Australia, a war imminent with Russia. I mean, just think of the geography of the and the logistics involved in that ludicrous claim. But it's all the usual suspects managed by all the usual people. It'll be Canada and the States as well. Can't get enlisting. It sounds like an on-ramp for Terminator soldiers, and the dog with the paintball gun suddenly goes a bit live. I don't like where we're heading with that, but let's park that for a minute. At the same time, that narrative obviously pumps oil. We've got the oil price moving up, and they're all talking to us about how inflation is going to go down and rate cuts are needed. And on the other hand, are saying, don't allow it to happen too much. Let's talk up this big conflict, which they're probably going to instigate. They want to keep it warm as a narrative. It's totally coordinated through all the usual suspect nations. And at the same time, they expect inflation to go down. So I just want to highlight that dichotomy, and you can comment on that separately. But let's just go through the scenarios. Again, a further reduction in income take, an increase in issuance of debt, which then starts to have people balking at the concept of being purchasers of this debt. This leads to a contagion. It could involve some pensions battling with selling. We saw the Cal teachers pension, the second largest in the US, have a problem and actually propose the solution that they get given special permission to borrow up to $30 billion against illiquid assets that they can't sell without moving the market, because they're so thin a bid, but they're going to loan against that. I mean, this is, I mean, you could literally have, and you'll excuse the phrase, a micro cap crypto token by a scammer that is bid up to this, and there's no bid under that at any moment could be crashed to zero if more than a certain amount of volume. And you're starting to get that micro scammer vibe with bonds and pensions. So, I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. The only difference is there's a government that says, oh, no, don't drop that amount of bonds on the market. Let's see, we have to finesse this. Well, maybe we'll lend you some more money here and you can pledge asset as collateral. Marking to market. They don't want the mark to market to be forced to its true point in the absence of bid, because then everything is shown to be insolvent. So what ends up happening, a real balk at the debt. Suddenly the people start distributing disorderly as much as they can inside constraints without wanting to look like the heavy seller. They're at a limit that they can get out every time, and they keep testing the bid. Fed is having to make that bid because no one else wants to buy. You made the point about them being buyer of last resort, and you said only, in fact, not, and suddenly they start saying, hey, you guys can't, you're not allowed to sell anymore, you know, there's some rules to that effect, but behind closed doors, causing a further panic. So privateers start to sell, and the interest rates, of course, is as this drip, drip, drip spill. And hasn't we called the collapse of the euro Swiss franc in 09 and a second time on the peg? And there's that moment where everybody thinks it's a sure thing, and then it traded through 1.2 and it traded 1.1999, and then the market realizes, hey, they didn't come in. And it trades 19.9593. And then they realize there's nothing there and they all dump. And then the next thing you know, it's traded 82 cents. You know, you in an FX market, you've had a 40% move because and a bid absence. And all the liquidity providers just stood back. So all the brokers took massive losses on clients that took much bigger losses than their margin could curtail, because everybody just said, no bid. We're not in the market, no bid. And the liquidity providers, the primary dealers, didn't put up an offer and didn't put up a bid under the market. So you had these vacuum gaps where everyone just chased down to get out and was taking ever bigger losses. Some of it will be algorithmic. And the bond equivalent of that starts to happen. That leads to an interest rate spike, which is disorderly. That sees the Fed rush out, like the Bank of England did when their currency came under attack from the Quantum Fund and George Soros, upping rates two or three times for a temporary liquidity problem, only for the rates to super spike well beyond what they've done and matters to be taken out of their hands and everybody asking, but you're in charge of rates, only to find out the market's in charge of rates and the bond debt situation has gone no bid, and other simultaneous events taking place in the global coordinated, the Western world coordinated debt system. I don't think it'll be any better in China and any other country. So it will probably be global as well via relationship, but particularly affecting the Western nations. We end up in this rate super spike where the dollar then has a super spike, biggest military first, which crushes a bunch of currencies. Nations like Turkey, South Africa, or those with dollar debt can't pay. You end up with an entire, we can't pay, what do you want us to do? These lockdowns, they close markets, you get the freeze, you get the shutouts, internet downs, various retail traders won't be able to get out, and you go bidless for a number of days, and they freeze the markets, and you will have no access. And then they will come with a temporary solution and some degree of liquidity that will be provided at some godforsaken air pocket low. And then that will start to a contagion of busts, a declarations of busts of banks, because they're the primary dealers of the debt. They're sitting on too much. And so we go into the full reset, where if you don't hold it and it's not physical, you don't own anything. And it comes down to a discussion we had on the Great Taking last time we spoke regarding shares, businesses, everything. And we go into a kind of lockdown that is similar to March 2020, without the biology theme, it's the financial theme. Because of unrest and social, they'll have groups that are getting rioting and going mad. Stay indoors, martial law. You know how they love control. The pandemic and wars give superpowers, and they love being in that space. We'll go into a financially driven one, or there's going to be a Russian hack narrative attached to also disperse the blame. And in that moment, we'll have a super spike in the dollar, then a subsequent very strong crash, and gold will be the only thing that anybody or everybody wants to hold, gold and silver. Where do you see, what would you add in a den, detail-wise, or change in that that version, that looking forward, how's the movie going to run?
First, I think that was an excellent synopsis. Basically, what you've described is the mathematical certainty of this happening. The only thing I might change would be everything is so levered today, and on top of all the leverage, there's a $2 quadrillion market of derivatives.
Yes.
And it's my thought that once this thing actually does pop and they do lose control, it'll be all over in 72 hours. There will be markets around the world will not open. I believe you talked about reset, and I think you're talking about the reset of asset pricing in the West. I really think that the reset that's coming is between East and West, and that we can segue that into war, because if you have read any of Vladimir Putin's speeches, and I urge everyone to read, he's done six or seven public speeches since 2022.
Yeah.
If you read his speeches, the man is basically saying, we want free, fair, and real settlement to trade. We just want to do business. And I think if you read any of his speeches or all of his speeches, I would challenge someone to actually try to pick it apart and what do you not disagree with. I don't find much in what he has said that anyone that is just open-minded and, you know, a true arbiter, if you will. I don't think anybody can find anything really wrong with what he said. Now, we can talk about the war aspect of it because I do believe that's where this is headed. And I don't necessarily think it's headed this way because of Russia and China. Russia and China are more or less trying to do business with the rest of the world. They're trying to not use dollars. They're trying to they built the Silk Road. They want to do trade, and they want to do trade in something that they can get paid for that's real. And that's obviously we're talking about the BRICS currency backing with gold, backing with oil, backing with other commodities. They're tired of the never pay model, and the never pay model is what the West has done with the dollar as the reserve currency. The dollar is backed by nothing. It's backed by the full faith and credit. The credit part is the joke there. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. Well, the bottom line is they send something real in trade, and the West sends them dollars. Well, dollars, when all is said and done, are nothing. They have no real value whatsoever. And understand that wars are very, very expensive. So you have a West where we talked about the central banks, we talked about the sovereign treasuries. They're basically insolvent already. Wars are very, very expensive. And few people know that the debt to GDP in Russia, for example, is under 20%. Now, China does have a debt problem in their economy, in real estate. And I've said for years, I'm not so sure they really even care about that because the assets that they built will remain. They borrowed money to build stuff, we borrowed money to eat. That's the difference. Now back to Russia. If you look at what's happened militarily, when I say militarily, I'm not talking about conflict, I'm talking about weapons systems. If you look at what's happened with weapons systems over just say the last 5 years, the US still has not had one successful hypersonic test. Russia actually has hypersonic weapons. And my late business partner, Jim Sinclair, used to say, if you can't catch it, you can't kill it. So it looks to me that Russia is, they do have military superiority. And this is going on, I said, for the last 5 years. For the last 5 years, what have you seen out of the leadership of America? You're watching generals, you're watching admirals wearing skirts and dresses and makeup because they want to be inclusive. I bet that scares the living shit out of the Chinese and Russians. And one last thing I do want to mention, just I guess to prove that gold is not a barbarous relic. If you go back in history and you look at wars or conflicts, what does the winner always do? What's the first thing they do? They take the
Go
gold.
and seize the
If
gold.
you go back,
Hitler went to
right.
France's gold and the West had removed it all. That's the first thing
Well,
everyone protects, and it's the first thing they go to.
Yamashita's gold, they hid it. But if you look, even when I say recently, Saddam Hussein, Muammar
Ukraine.
Gaddafi, and what's the first thing? What is the first thing the West did? They went and they took the gold. So it has to have some special meaning to the powers that be in the West. They have to truly understand that gold is real. It is money. It's the ultimate money. It cannot default. It's power. But they don't want the people to have it, which is why they have the media consistently say, oh, it's a pet rock. It's a barbarous relic. You don't want it. It's scary, scary. But it is, if they're doing it, if it's what they go to, you should go to it also.
I don't know if you recall the drip-drip return of Germany's gold, and then the Dutch had also requested their gold back, but they did it far more subtly
I
behind
do
closed
remember that.
doors. and they got settled
I
in the hole
after
the after the seizure of Ukraine's gold in the Maidan, the post-Maidan events. So it's amazing how it didn't come from Fort Knox or whatever we think we believe is in there. It came from other people's metals and was done.
Yeah, let me comment on that, because I did write several articles back at that time. I think it was, 2013 or 14 when Germany requested 300 tons of gold. And it was only 300 tons of gold. It was not a huge amount. And immediately the U.S. came out and said, or they jointly came out and said, well, it's going to take some time, 3 or 4 years, because we just can't ship that much gold that quickly. It's too dangerous, blah, blah, blah. Well, I actually researched it, and I think the number, and this is off the top of my head now because it's been so long ago, I think it would have taken 4 747 jumbo cargo planes to move the 300 tons, because I think the max capacity is like 95 tons or 97 tons and my numbers may be off, but I think I came up with, it would have taken 4 flights to do it. And it took, I think, until 2016 or 17 for the remainder, for the final gold to arrive to Germany. And the interesting thing is, it was not German gold. It did not bear the serial numbers that were delivered originally. And I guess, people think, well, gold is gold is gold. And I think that's really not a good way to think, because let's put it this way.
Try do that with firearms and have the wrong serial number. I say, try do that with firearms. It's a gun is a gun is a gun, it's absolutely not right.
If you think about it from a personal standpoint, you go out and you buy some gold. And this happened to me. I'm not going to say what company it was. I will say it was on the East Coast. A big depository on the East Coast. You could probably infer from that. I bought a bunch of 2001 1/10 ounce coins back then. I mean, gold was, $2.70 an ounce. So the premium was not... I was looking for small rather than premium, or rather than the cheapest coin. So I bought 2001 coins. I held them in storage for almost five full years. The second half of 2006, I was preparing to leave the country. I retired the very beginning of November, and I wanted to ship that metal to Switzerland. I wanted to get everything out of the United States at the time. Well, it turns out that the metal that was shipped were 2005 coins. They were not 2001 coins. And I was paying for segregated storage. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what happened to it? You could pretty much guess what happened to it. It got rehypothecated, just like everything else is rehypothecated 10 times over. So I asked for my metal before the music stopped, and Germany asked for their metal before the music stopped. The point I'm trying to make is, the music's going to stop, and you're not going to have it unless it is truly segregated. And you need to do research. If you're going to vault your metal, do research. And I would say, make sure that you vault with a company that does no pooling whatsoever. That way you can be fairly safe in thinking that your metal's not being lent out.
Yeah,
One other thing, just as an example, and I've used this example because we've been talking about the great taking now for 2 or 3 months. What kind of business model could work with in the brokerage industry, where they're charging you $7.95 per trade, whether it's $1,000 trade, $100,000 trade, or $100 million trade? What business model could possibly work? How could you do enough trades at 795 for these people to fly around in private jets, limousines, et cetera, et cetera? That's not how they make their money. The way they make their money is you deposit your stock and they turn around and lend it out and they earn the interest on it. That's the business model. So if you think that, first off, if you think that you deposit $10,000 into your bank and they squirrel it away in the vault in the back, you're wrong. As a matter of fact, what was it when COVID started? I think the banks were allowed to go zero reserves, so they didn't have to have any reserves. So I mean, that's two industries right there. You've got the brokers and you've got the banks, where they're able to rehypothecate as much as they want.
I want to summarize what you're saying. We live in a fractional reserve system where there is no such thing as your money. There was something pooled, there's a debit enter and a promise. And actually, the banking system, the model of that banking system in all major endeavors has been replicated. You have a fractional reserve gold system. The fact that you can't get your
Correct.
specific gold and that you were paying storage on something that you weren't even they weren't even holding for you, they'll say, "We'll get it just before when he asks for it. We'll buy a week," and says, "Oh, it's going to take some time, and we'll get it in then." So you were probably paying rent on a space you didn't need him to rent, because they didn't have it. They had it out somewhere else. And the same thieves are perpetuating the same model in a multitude of anything in terms of your share certificates on the great taking. There's a pool of equities, and they've put it all out, they've lent it all out, they've done what they want with it. They don't have what you have, and it's quickly get it when he asks for it. Most people, most of the time, aren't asking it. And it takes us back to the blacksmith and the original home of money, where fractional reserving actually started. That's the trick. And it's in every industry now. It's not just our financial system. And another reason why it's time to start asking for things and demanding them physically. And it's only because of your move. You may have the same game played with you in Switzerland. It might be time to ask for it delivered home again if that's where you're going to see everything out. I'm trying to see what lessons, how do we troubleshoot in this great game of unfolding so that we are not 100% victim in this event that we were scenario casting, which you quite correctly, with the results of derivatives and the scale of everything, it'll be grid down, it'll be locked down. Hey, financial system, logger jammed, everybody's bust, blah, 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 this has happened. I think they'll scapegoat someone as a hack, but we all know they need this event, regardless if there was one. And that will be the war narrative to justify a bit of population neutering. You've just got to make sure you're as far away from the war as possible. You're as limited digitized as possible, and you have as much physical wealth in physical items as possible. You're as self-reliant as possible. You have your own water, your own solar panels, and you're close to your local farmer where you have a share in the farm, ideally. And a third of his sheep are named yours. You're going to get a good price for them, and take silver and gold in as currency in teaspoons or silverware or as you choose, and load up like a gent. Because and arm up like a gent to protect your position, especially if it's known that you've done that. What would you add to anything else you would add to that or change?
We could probably talk for I wouldn't delete anything that you just mentioned. I think the easiest way to describe what you listed out is you want as few counterparties as possible in every aspect of your life. You want to rely on other people,
Local.
other counterparties as little as possible. You want to be as self-sufficient as you possibly can. I think that's the big, the summary of it.
And people don't understand that counterparting is everywhere. They all go, "Well, I'm with Goldman Sachs. They'll
Everywhere.
never be allowed to go down." Or, "I'm with so and so." No, haircuts all around in everything. They're all tied to each other. It's like a long string of miners and the fat bloke for climbers, and the fat bloke falls. Everybody's going down who's tied to him. You're all going down that cliff face. It's too big. He's falling too hard. You're all getting pulled out. Doesn't matter what you knocked in the wall on the way up, the rope snapping. It's that big a deal. It's such a calamity. And that's going to be disinflation. And in those moments, shares won't be worth that much. But at least if you have your certificates, they will probably recover as shares in businesses. And they'll probably continue to function, providing they haven't lost power, or they'll be started back up after the shock and awe problem phase before, and the reaction is playing out. But expect social unrest, expect looting, because they'll even pay them to do that so that they can implement a martial law to control you and lock you down again. Only this time it will be a different narrative, I think. I don't know what further to say.
You sound just like me. You sound crazy. Five, 10 years ago, we were crazy. Now it's pretty obvious. And if it's not obvious, then you're not paying attention. I would ask a question. What happens? The thought process since World War II is that the risk-free asset on the planet Earth was U.S. Treasury bonds. And I think the questioning of the solvency, the questioning of even the morals, I guess you could say, the judicial system, et cetera, in the United States, the questioning of treasuries is going to lead people to ask that question. Well, you know, why are treasuries really risk-free? And the more someone digs, the more they're going to find out the only risk-free asset on the planet is gold and silver. So I think that's where this is headed. Now, whether we get there before or after the crash, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if that contributed to the crash. People figuring out, hey, wait a minute, the U.S. is a deadbeat in every facet, in every way.
Yeah.
Financially, militarily, morally, judicially, the U.S. is not even a shadow of its former self.
I did an entrepreneurial MBA, and we were taught the risk-free rate, you know, the hurdle rate that all businesses had to surpass that were taking risk was the 10-year T-bill. And of course, this was because they'll never go bad on you. And of course, that's an absolute fallacy. And I love a gold bar in the hand is the only thing that's risk-free, and a gun to protect it, maybe. Do you know, Bill, there was a yield curve inversion that reverted positive recently, and that was the 30s and 2s. So I was explaining the yield curve inversion. Forgive me, I'll do just a short explainer. I know you know this, but just for the audience, yield curve inversion being long-term debt, having the shorter-term debt rates deducted from it, and that differential. Normal markets, upward sloping, the longer out you go, the higher it should be because you're compounding in an inflationary environment. And that's the expectation. When a crisis starts to rear its head, you get inversion where the short rates are paying a higher yield than the longer term. That is scared, a fear, a bigger bid under long-term debt, a calming down. And the real hit always comes back on the reversion back through the zero. Typically, it's a leading indicator, and I hate lagging indicators. So many things in technical analysis are lagging indicators on the charts. I don't use any mathematical formulas or moving averages or MACDs. This is an economic leading indicator that highlights the panic, and it's actually the normalization and the reversion back, and the first of many popular traded up through. And that's why I think we've also seen this rush of activity by the Fed, because they will be an observer. They know it's 100% indicator. Literally, every major crisis has been called by the reverting back to zero of the yield curve. But I want to, as a lot of people will be watching this video, I want to put them all on notice. We've transitioned from that amber light to the red light. It's imminent now. The train is coming. You know, the boom is going to come down. You're going to get trapped in a space you don't want to be in. Do you agree? Anything you would add? What's your take?
Oh, I would just say, as a student of history, Every single recession in the United States since the Depression had one thing ahead of that, and that was an inverted yield curve. Now, having an inverted yield curve does not guarantee a recession, but every recession that's ever occurred always had an inverted yield curve ahead of time. So it's a serious warning sign. And I've got to say, and I hate saying this because when you hear this time it's different or this time it might be different, this time it might be different just from the standpoint of this is not a cyclical move. This is a secular move. This is the end of an empire. So, will classical relationships continue? It's hard to say whether, what has always been throughout history, when there was not the possibility, probability, or mathematical certainty that the financial system will end because it can't continue. This is a secular event. It's not a cyclical event. Cyclical event happens every 4 years, 5 years, whatever, 10 years. A secular event, you're talking about things like the French Revolution. You're talking about things like the Bolshevik Revolution. You're talking about World War II. The fall of Rome, that was a secular event. The fall of the United States, that's a secular event, but it's the biggest secular event in all of history because it will affect more people, more land mass than anything ever before. And I mean, if the US goes down, how many central banks have 50, 60, 70, 95% of their reserves in dollars? So when the dollar finally gets smoked, how many other foreign central banks are completely smoked and have nothing but a black hole of worthless dollars on their balance sheet?
Yeah, I think I was going to add it's the biggest inversion that's taken place in the modern era in the last 40 years. There was, the 30s was interesting and bigger, and the curves were quite different back then. But against any of the other crises, it's also the longest one. This 30 and 2 has been 1 year, 6 months, and 10 days before it finally broke above zero, and the others are yet to. So it's the first of many. But once the leader does, the others can squirt up very, very quickly and usually do. So we've had the first shoe drop on timing because the frustration I always get is people think we clairvoyants, people like you and I, Bill, they say, when's it happening? As if you go, okay, let me just check my calendar. It's going to be 3:30 on the 24th of March. But we can tell you the stages are going through. It's like firing a gun, you for safety, you hold your fingers outside the triggering zone. But this gun is in the shoulder, it's cocked, there's a round in the chamber, and the fingers have left and they've moved inside the trigger guard and they're on the trigger now. Now, I still can't tell you when he pulls that trigger, but boy, he's getting real close now. The next stage is the round coming down real quick at you. And that's kind of how I tend to have to deal with it because people, as I say, if you've got a little bit of insight, they expect you to be a clairvoyant. But that's a real biggie. And like you say, the other thing is the interoperability and the cross holdings is now a global village of lepers. It's a synchronized mainstream media, as I was mentioning, we were discussing just before we went live with the whole military mayhem and narrative all uniformed. There's those clips that go around with all the TVs where they're all saying the same word speak. This is exactly that. When you're getting Australia saying we're in threat of Russia and we don't have enough soldiers, you're talking about an island on the other side of, the planet that are now saying, fear the great Russian bear. We really need to get ready. This is all scripted. And the financial system of the particularly the Western axis, but the general one, because they're still crossing over with the BRICS and trade is still global to a fair degree, despite the bifurcation, is even more reliant on it. And it's ring a ring of rosies, a pocket full of posies. We all fall down. We all fall down. You can't stand up no matter how strong you are. as I say, it's like being the only climber who knocked a peg in the rock, but you've got six other climbers that are all ahead of you that are all toppled over and throwing it down the cliff. You're wrecked by virtue of association. And you're not a doomsayer, and you're not wrong in saying it's different. I go again to the probability of the event. It's very highly likely. It's almost impossible for me to see it not happening, short of an asteroid strike. And it's very highly likely to be exceedingly big. And this makes us seem, as the light's going down and I'm disappearing into the dark here, a bit like a doom scroller. But I've absolutely, how else do you go, listen, we should get away lightly here. It's going to be a soft landing. How else do you credibly make a case for that? Is it even possible?
Yeah, you can't make a case for that. And let me just say one thing as far as timing. You're absolutely right. No one has a crystal ball. Nobody has a calendar. But I will say, remember, this year is an election year in the United States.
Yes.
November. So I have been a proponent for a long time saying that once this got terminal, they would have to kick the table over because there's been too many illegal things have been done. And
yes,
that leads me to the election coming up. If the powers that be believe that they will not be able to cheat enough to keep the people that are in office now in office, if they think there's going to be a groundswell of pissed off voters and there's no way to cheat enough to prevent the turnover, I believe they will be so afraid of the ramifications, the potential jail terms, etc., that we won't have an election. They will kick this thing over prior to the election.
Yeah.
And who knows how they'll do it or what they'll use as you know, the spark, but it doesn't really matter. The table's kicked over.
100%. I totally agree with that. It's almost like the Obama-Putin chess versus checkers thing. The only way once you realize you've been snookered on both games is to smash it over the pieces. Interestingly enough, you get the crypto crowd, and I just want to make a comment for them. It's absolutely telling. Yes, okay, Bitcoin, you can have that, and I would potentially hold a little bit of it maybe, if speculative if you want to, but you're going to be power dependent, you're going to be grid dependent, you're going to be internet dependent. It's not going to be the thing that necessarily saves you, although it can be revived once that stuff comes back on. But the USDT, the all the tethers and dollar equivalents that are on the blockchain reverted recently, instead of holding Bitcoin and other tokens as collateral, which was super volatile, recently to treasuries and became a useful buyer. And I think that's why we've had the likes of Bitfinex actually get left alone, because they were being harassed a lot previously when they were offering a stable coin. The guys behind Bitfinex Exchange were involved with that. Your stable coin will fail in the blockchain environment if it has collateral, which it does, based in the real world digitized financial system. In other words, it will become an asset based entirely on faith and will not be backed meaningfully. And it will be your choice if you choose to take it, because the intrinsic value could again be zero or 0.1. And that will have effect for all those trapped in Bitcoin. In short, those that think they've created a totally independent, separate bubble and a separate universe of existence are living in a delusion. Right or wrong, Bill?
I would just ask this question. I think you're right as far as it's a bubble. It's a bubble that's speculated on nothing. I mean, my opinion is cryptocurrencies are digital air. When the system goes down, you'll find out that they're worth zero. One of the beauties of crypto years ago was the supposedly it was anonymous. And I would just ask you, who's the largest Bitcoin holder in the world? It's the United States, the United States Treasury. And how is that? Through confiscation. They've confiscated you know, from drug dealers, whatever, through court cases, they confiscated Bitcoin, and I believe they are the biggest Bitcoin holder in the world. So if, you know, if they can, and I don't know whether Pablo Escobar or not had Bitcoin, but I'm trying to make an analogy. If they can confiscate Bitcoin from Pablo Escobar, why do you think they can't confiscate your Bitcoin?
Especially if it can be seen, tracked, and monitored. And it's
correct,
not
exactly.
Quietly. Yeah, it's open source banking.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a warning in there for the crypto people that think they've got their better than gold special solution for our times. In actual fact, the surveillance and the power is very much being enacted through your device, through your internet, through your telephone line, through all communication systems that are part of a surveillance network. And in actual fact, you don't want to be part of that. You don't want to be part of that. You want to be physical at the moment they're pushing everything digital. If you don't hold it, the 9/10 of the law rule applies. It's not yours. And if you can't protect it, it won't stay yours. And I think that's, it's got to be the baseline for everybody. How much of your wealth do you physically hold under your direct control without counterparty risk? And how much of it are you prepared to protect in an environment where social disruption, military enlistment, all forms of martial law potential, like proxies, whether it be health, climate, hack, or any other story, they seem to have prepared a few. By the way, Bill, there's a drill going on with NATO that's taking place. I think it's starting not too soon, until May. And there's an uncanny tendency for large-scale, well-set-up drills to go live as well, especially given this recent MSM surge that they've been doing. They've not done much on the justification. They just say, we don't have the troops, we should do more, there has to be a war. You know, they haven't described what winning is, and what bombing Moscow, only taking over the country and putting a puppet government in. You think you're going to do that? They haven't determined that. They haven't determined what cost it will come with, how much debt it will create. This is the final crescendo to crush the debt system. And they haven't quantified any aspect of what wins, what price in bodies, lives, and money it would be. It's just like, we've got to start this bottomless pit. It's unerring. So I'm with you on the 2024 being the year. It's 4-year QE cycle, quantitative easing and quantitative tightening. It's a 4-year Bitcoin halvening cycle that relies on easing to actually pump the Bitcoin money up. And it is a 4-year presidency cycle. And they love doing things on the cusp of the baton being handed over from previous to new, because the old guy can say, listen, I was winding down, it's not really me anymore. The new guy said it didn't happen on my shift. You know, it's kind of ideal. That's if elections take place. The 4-year cycle. Is 2024 the year? It sounds like both of us are saying yes.
I think so.
And do you have a special preference for, let's look into our Christmas ball. Everybody asks us, when's it going to happen, guys? Given the drills, the NATO, the possible go live event, is it going to be the, I think there's a quite realistic chance it could be H1 of this year. And March is going to be a troublesome period, especially if that repo money goes away. I think you get the repo banking problems coming back if they don't do bank, because the banks aren't going to lend to each other overnight. They don't trust each other.
Right.
They're only happy when the Fed's in there playing the game. Then they're happy to lend to everyone because everyone's got a proxy backer. The minute the Fed pulls back a scheme, what do you think is going to happen between now and March 11th? Are they going to get high on the hog now and try stockpile? Or is it going to, or are they going to start tapering their reliance on it? I'm not too sure. But all I know is very soon after March the 11th, I'm expecting repo banking problems and people looking at each other like they don't trust each other, sort of Mexican standoff on the overnight lending.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to speculate on what exactly it is that's the spark, and I wouldn't want to speculate when the spark is. I mean, Francis, this the whole thing could blow up before you get this interview posted. Who knows?
Yeah.
I know is from a mathematical standpoint, the Western financial system is the Western banking system, the Western monetary system is completely toast. So when it goes and what causes it, I wouldn't even try to speculate.
Yeah. But the probability is 100%. And we both like 2024 with all the events.
No, I won't say the probability is 100% in 2024, but I will say
no, 100%. But we, mathematically, I meant that. Yeah,
mathematically, the system is untenable. The system will come down. You know, if you live 5 years, 10 years, I think it's a certainty. I can't say that because, you know, you've got time involved. But I can tell you that future generations will look back and see absolutely, positively, 100%, they'll look back and see a different system that did implode. And people are going to look back and wonder, how is anyone so stupid to have participated in a system like that?
Yeah, 100%. 100% agree. Jim, it's been excellent. It's been excellent talking to you. I love the way you've put it out and laid it out. It's straight talking. It's useful metaphors. We've kind of summarized the plan we think people should take on a non-advisory basis. We're not financial advisors. Any parting shot that you would like to give as a message for people before you tell everyone how they can engage with you?
I would just say do the best you can. I mean, everyone has different abilities. Some are doers, some are thinkers. Just do the best you can with what you have. And I mean, you're the only one who knows whether you're doing the best you can or not. When this thing goes down, if you didn't do the best you can, then yeah, you can blame yourself, kick yourself in the ass. But if you did the best you can, I guarantee you, myself, and everyone will have forgotten something, will have missed something. And don't kick yourself in the ass because, oh, I forgot to do this or I forgot to do that. Just do the best you can and put your head down and go forward. And just understand that you're going to miss some aspects. There's no question about it. So, you know, just do the best you can. Get yourself right mentally, physically, spiritually. Be happy with yourself and do the best you can.
I love that, and I think it's practical and simple. Be in high health. Make sure you're physically strong. It's a great way of ensuring mentally also. It's a psyop, isn't it, Bill? You know, this whole process, we've been chosen to run an obstacle course, one of the biggest and baddest ever, with almost, you know, the most testing obstacles, I think. And you've been chosen to do this because you can. It's actually a special privilege in a weird, weird way. So make sure you're ready for it. Many people don't know they're going to be asked to run a marathon. They're overweight. They're sitting drinking beer at the start line and they're not watching, you know, they're watching the TV, but they're going to be made to run. The others have trained, are fit and ready. And again, a metaphor, but you won't be perfectly ready. It's going to be a big one. And you might have to gut some moments out, but you're going to be a whole bunch better for even starting preparation than if you don't do anything at all. And mentally, the support that gives you, thinking you're building something towards an end that, and do it for families and give advice to friends, is going to be absolute medicine. Be a leader, a local leader. Get localized with your local support chains, farmers, for food supply, maybe make some tactical investments even so that you're small shareholding, maybe have a community militia that has a shareholding in a farm and also discusses, you know, arm-related incidents, becomes close to your police. All these things are going to be real practical things from a prepper sense. Bill, that's awesome. It's super good. BillHalter.com is the website. You have a newsletter. Some details for those watching that would like to engage further with you.
Yeah, if you want to reach me, you can go to BillHalter.com. There is a contact icon there. I did recently change my business address. You can reach me directly at BHOLTER@proton.me.
Great. So for contacting you there, and the rest, there's also contacts from the website. Bill does a great newsletter highlighting key charts, visual as well as textual, of how you're actually being proliferated away, and why inevitably gold has to be, and silver, a big part of your defense in terms of balance sheet and financial. Jim, Bill, sorry, apologies for doing that. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and it's been absolutely awesome, and thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Francis. Thanks for having me.